stop and frisk cases. Stop and frisk was just one of three parts.
We have 10 seconds.
Yeah, there's the summonses and the arrest, I wish were included, you know, then maybe our lawsuit wouldn't be necessary.
I want to thank you both for being with us, New York Police Lieutenant Edwin Raymond and Stephen Mang, director and producer of the documentary Crime and Punishment. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock. Coming up next, Abe and Joe discuss Trump's wall and take your calls.
The World Arts Foundation and KBOO would like to invite you to the 34th anniversary and tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. entitled, We've Come This Far, Keep Alive the Dreams. On Monday, January 21st, 2019, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason Street. There'll be a host of civic leaders, choirs, the Jefferson Dancers, and of course, our own Victory Village Marketplace. Again, keep alive the dream. Monday, January 21st from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason, presented by the World Arts Foundation and broadcast live by KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, January 14th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen the film Dirty Dancing, where Baby learns about love, adult responsibility, and the dirty boogie. Again, that's Dirty Dancing, showing Monday, January 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You bet.
It is, in fact, a new year.
Yeah, tonight Trump's going to lie.
By the Julian calendar.
Yes.
The Gregorian calendar.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Trump's going to lie tonight.
Trump lies every night. What's the difference?
Oh, well, he's going to lie to the nation.
Oh, he's going
to
lie on primetime TV.
Yeah, primetime lying.
Oh, I see.
Cool.
Uh-huh. So the networks are making a deep investment in their own integrity by allowing the commander-in-chief to have free airtime to lie.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Well, and this is in their best interest. Why?
Because they're scared of him.
They are scared of him. One anonymous network executive was quoted as saying something to the effect of, well, you know, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. If we refuse to let him on, Trump's going to say, see, fake news. And if we do let him on, then we're allowing him to lie to everybody.
Right.
So damned if they do and damned if they don't.
I have to tell people that you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call, 231-8187.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about today because, frankly, and I say this, I wish I was saying this ironically, but I'm not. These are unprecedented times.
In
which we live.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really scary stuff brewing here just below the surface.
Well, my biggest fear is when this guy is thoroughly cornered, he'll make a war.
Yeah, that's among my biggest fears, too. Right now, the biggest fear of today is that he will make good on his threat to declare a state of national emergency regarding the alleged border security crisis.
He can't do that.
He can.
He can't legally do that.
He can. The president can declare a state of emergency, and in so doing, trigger a rather significant extension of his executive powers.
Are you sure it's legal?
I am sure. I've been doing some research, because I do host a talk radio show about such
things.
Oh,
you do?
I do.
Okay. Tell me why. No, not why you do talk radio, because I don't know why.
Yeah, who knows? Ego?
Ego.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it's just ego.
Compared to other constitutions of modern representative democracies, the United States Constitution is comparably vague when it comes to delineating the extent of emergency executive powers. The constitutions in the advanced European nations, for example, describe very clearly what it means when there's an emergency and what the executive can and cannot do. That's a little less defined in this country, a lot less defined, actually. Not surprisingly, whenever there are states of emergency, the president usually puts the pedal to the metal and does a whole bunch of things that in other times might be not acceptable or would definitely not be acceptable.
Right.
The Supreme Court is in a position, in theory, to intervene when these sorts of things happen, but historically the court has tended not to take a position while the event is ongoing.
Beer.
Probably the most notable example of this is Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus during the Civil War. The Supreme Court, only after the war was over, ruled that that had, in fact, been unconstitutional.
Yeah, but there was no beer issue then.
There was no beer issue. Well, who knows? There might have been. We just don't know.
Beer was that what she drank for breakfast in those days.
Yeah. The Atlantic Monthly has a nice article out right now about this very subject, what the president can and cannot do, or what the president might attempt to do given the ambiguity of the situation. There are a host of laws that have been passed over the years describing different emergency situations and what the president might do with them. For our intents and purposes today, can the president marshal his emergency powers to begin construction of a border wall?
Well, yeah, I thought not, but you say so.
Yeah, I think maybe he can. Here's how it works.
Okay.
The president declares an emergency and then has to inform Congress of the laws that it is now invoking as the basis for its executive powers. Right?
Okay.
So the executive branch declares an emergency. One of the laws existing permits the Secretary of the Army to begin construction on public works. Well, public works is the wrong phrase here. To begin projects, construction projects.
Projet.
That might otherwise be illegal, given that they have a direct bearing on the nature of the emergency. So Trump could say we have a border emergency at the wall or at the border. We need to have a wall. Therefore, I'm declaring an emergency, and I'm going to get the Army to start building a wall.
So even though he will manifestly lie, provably lie easily, yeah. Mm-hmm. He can still do this.
Yeah, but see, we've retired the concepts of both truth and hypocrisy in this country, Joe. So that really doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot.
Don't tell me that. No.
No, I'm being tongue-in-cheek here, but there's an underlying seriousness. Trump can lie his ass off all day long, every day, and face little or no consequences. We've seen that. That is the ongoing state of affairs in which we now exist. The Republicans have shown no, and I mean no, zero inclination to hold him accountable for any of this.
Right. That's certainly true.
Yeah. So essentially, he can talk out of any bodily orifice he likes and face no immediate consequences anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
So that's what I'm worried about.
Right.
What I'm worried about is that the state of emergency will be declared. He'll begin to build his wall.
Yeah.
It'll be an emergency appropriation, theoretically, of some kind will happen to pay for this. The wall will be built. And, of course, the Army, in that situation, if we're gaming this out, will have to exercise eminent domain and seize property from people.
No, you got the posse comitatus law that doesn't allow the Army to operate in the United States in that manner.
No, in matters of law enforcement.
Right.
This, I'm sure the administration would argue, is something different.
Oh.
So we're looking at a frightening situation here, not because the wall itself is morally repugnant, which it is. The wall, should it be erected, and Trump really likes to erect big things.
It's a compensation thing.
It is a compensation thing. Should the wall be erected, it will not be a symbol of American strength. In American security, it will be a symbol of collective national failure.
Well, I agree, but you know, this is a little bit like what East Germany and Russia, Soviet Union, did in Berlin.
Yeah, a little bit like that. Yeah. Yeah, and we know that wasn't effective.
Well, it was effective in the sense that after a while, very few people dared to go across the machine gun armed barrier.
Yeah, within Berlin itself, yes.
Yeah.
But it didn't stop the flow of people from the east into the west.
Yeah, it did. It slowed there was down. A lot of barbed wire and a lot of guns.
Yeah. every contemporary analysis that I've come across has projected that the efficacy of the wall will be negligible at best.
Well,
it's not going to stop people from
It's also weird in the sense that water rights will be violated. A lot of the people who grow cotton or raise cattle or whatever will suddenly find themselves without access to the necessary water to do what they do.
Yes, not to mention the non-domesticated wildlife, which will no longer be able to move freely across the U.S.-Mexico border.
So no more jaguars.
Jaguars do not recognize the border between the United States and Mexico, nor do any of the other critters who live down in the neck of the woods.
Yeah.
It would be a monumental symbol of our failure in nearly every respect. It is morally repugnant, it's un-American, and racist. Let's not forget that.
Well, that's probably, at its core, the most important racist. Significant thing about it.
Yeah.
He does not like people who speak Spanish.
No, it's quite clear that he doesn't. Yeah. So 503-231-8187 is the number to call to take part in this conversation. We're also taking your written comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeAndJoe, and also over the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. What is your take on all this, Joe?
Well, I have a couple of things. I mean, we have an enormous degree of hypocrisy out of the Republican Party. Remember Dick Cheney calling
Leahy, Senator Leahy.
Yeah, Patrick Leahy. He said, "Go bloop yourself.
Go perform an anatomically impossible act."
Well, no, maybe not for Leahy. I don't know. Anyway. So there was that. Then Kanye West, who is the most craziest person I know of.
Most craziest?
Most craziest. Yeah. And he was in the White House, and he said actually exactly what the woman who supposedly was naughty said.
Yeah, but who cares?
Well, I think I don't care in the sense that I don't. Our language, in fact, our dictionaries no longer recognize the illegitimacy of certain language.
So you're talking about the newly minted congresswoman from Michigan,
yeah,
who used a salty term to describe her ambitions as
another anatomically impossible thing.
We're going to impeach the blankety blank.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And to that I say, who cares? I don't really care. I mean, if we're getting worked up about salty language right now, you can be virtually assured that it is nothing but political theater. I mean, who cares? Nobody cares. Right. There's far more at stake right now than somebody's choice of language.
Well, but the interesting thing about this, the hypocrisy of it, is that the Republicans are pretending like they really care, even as their people do it a lot.
We have a looming climate crisis. We have a government that's going into its fourth week of being shut down. We have hundreds of thousands of families going without paychecks as a result. We have deteriorating infrastructure that's not being able to be maintained, and even the most basic of senses. But sure, let's talk about the new congresswoman who said a nasty word.
Well,
let's talk about that.
I bring it up only because it's the epitome of the hypocrisy of this administration.
Yeah, I would agree. But as I mentioned earlier, they retired hypocrisy a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I want to talk for a minute about the shutdown because it is intricately tied in with the discussion about the wall.
Yes.
Because that's why we are where we are, right?
Yeah.
Way back in last year, both houses of Congress passed overwhelmingly a continuing resolution to continue to fund the government while the administration and Congress hash out their differences.
Right.
Passed 100-0 in the Senate, passed overwhelmingly in the House. The president was poised to sign it until some of his friends on Fox News said he would be a wimp if he did. So then he decided not to, put his thumb in his mouth,
and the shut junkie, down the junkie also said not to.
Limbaugh? Junkie Limbaugh?
Yeah, the guy, yeah, he was a junkie. So, I don't know if he still is, but he was.
Friends on TV and on the radio.
Yeah.
And they all said he would be a wimp if he did it.
Well, you can't call him a wimp.
No, oh, no. So no. That's where we are. So the government is shut down, as I mentioned, stretching into its fourth week now. If things continue, seem to be the longest shutdown in history. The longest was back during the Clinton era, remember?
Right.
When Gingrich demanded huge cuts to Medicare and to public education.
And it turned out to be a disaster, and Gingrich really suffered.
Yeah. So, and then we have the very interesting specter of the president. Also last year, remember way back last year when he did that weird impromptu televised press conference from the Oval Office with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, in which he said I'll shut it down. I'm proud to shut down the government. I won't even blame you guys for it, he said.
Yeah, well, that's a paraphrasing, but yes.
Well, no, I'm pretty sure that's pretty close to the
pretty close, absolute, pretty close.
Quote, and I will look that up.
Okay.
as the show goes on. And of course, now he is blaming the Democrats for the shutdown of the government. All this is to say that real people's lives are being impacted by this. Our standing in the global community, such as it remains, is deteriorating even more.
Mm-hmm.
And the machinery of our government, as corrupted as it is falling even further into disrepair. This is, I can't even describe this as governance. This is something else entirely. I don't even know how. What,
well,
how
it's a giant ego fantasy made real.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah.
But in any event, it's bad. It's bad for all of us. It's bad for the nation. You know, and there's really no solution on the immediate horizon.
You're right. And, you know, I think there's
Let's take a phone call.
Yeah, people want to talk to us.
Mike, you're first. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I have a quick question, maybe not quick. I was told that either Nancy Pelosi or somebody in the Democratic Party is going to have time for a rebuttal. Now, is that going to be allowed or not? Can you answer that?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that the Democrats have asked for time for a rebuttal.
And traditionally, they get it.
Traditionally, they get it. It's all a bit silly, but I don't know the answer.
Okay, well, I'll see if you can find out. I'm curious. Anyways, they also got an anatomical thing you're talking about. I used to play with a band called the Clams, and it was called the Hoop Snake.
Oh, I see.
Is okay. That the Clams, like the Clam Tones?
Yeah, I was a lead guitar for that.
Oh, yeah, I know you then.
Yeah, I know. Okay, well, I'm curious, because if they don't allow the rebuttal, then everything they say...
What happened?
Oh, I think we lost Mike.
I'm sorry. We lost him.
Oh, hey, thank you for the call, Mike. I'm going to try and find out about an answer to your rebuttal question. Let's go to Norm.
Hey, Norm. You're on the air.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for your service. You know, I think Ms. Cortez's, use of a, you know, that word is...
Well, it wasn't her.
Kind of thing that,
yeah, it wasn't
pardon
her.
Pardon me?
It wasn't her, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, whoever you know called him a you know what.
Uh-huh.
You know that's what a Democrat has to do to compete with Trump in the news cycle.
Well, I think unfortunately you're right. It's hard to compete. It's hard to compete with a crazy man.
He gets a lot of traction from saying the most outrageously stupid and weird things, and the most ballsy things. And that's what his opponent in the next election is going to have to do, because, you know, I vacillate between, you know, thinking Trump's a complete idiot to thinking he's a genius. And what he's a genius at, I believe, is, you know, his domination of the news cycle. And his opponent is going to have to do that like he does. I mean, they got to learn from him.
Well, I don't think the answer is to go low. I do think the answer is to go logical, and even perhaps to engage in a hopefully alternative idea set for America. By the way, there's an excellent article in the recently released New Yorker on how Trump became so dominating in the media. About the guy who created the show, you know, the show where he fires people. Anyway, so it's a kind of an interesting process, and I think that people were a little late in recognizing the fascist nature of all of that.
I think his opponent's going to have to go outrageous.
I don't know. I think that the opponent has to go hopeful, logical, good ideas myself.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks very much for the call.
All right. To answer Mike's question, yes, the major networks are going to air the Democratic rebuttal to President Trump's speech tonight.
And Trump indefinitely said on the 12th of December, if we don't get what we want, I will shut down the government. That's a direct quote.
Yeah, there's more of it too. He even digs himself deeper into that hole.
Well, it's weird because aside from the apparent magnitude of his support from people who don't know nothing, and I have to say that at this point, mm-hmm. he really is obviously a crazy person.
Oh, quite clearly, yeah.
And he obviously lies. There's a joke which is going around, it's true. How do you tell when Donald Trump lies? When he speaks.
Of course. That's not a new joke.
It's an old joke.
It's evergreen. You can adapt it to any situation.
Yeah, and it's always true.
So amid all this stuff,
yeah,
amid all this business about the wall and shutting down the government and so on, a new Congress was sworn in.
Yes. Hopefully, like a kind of Congress. It's got a lot of persons of color. It's got
a lot of women.
A lot of women.
The most women ever, of course, amounting to about a quarter of everybody in the House of Representatives. So we're nowhere near gender parity in Congress. But hey, we're taking steps in that direction. Also, more people of color than ever before.
Right.
And we had we had the wonderful spectacle. Okay, Mike Pence is the vice president, right? One of his roles under the Constitution is to preside over the business of the Senate.
Right.
To break ties if there's a tie.
Right.
And also to preside over the swearing in of new members.
Right.
So we had the newly elected senator from Arizona, Kristen Sinema, uh-huh. the first openly bisexual United States senator. So here's Mike Pence. What do we know about Mike Pence? Mike Pence is a crazy religious person. So here he is. Swearing in an openly bisexual senator.
Not on the Bible.
Not on the Bible, but on a logbook because in addition to being queer, she is an atheist. You could almost see Pence's head exploding in slow motion. It was beautiful.
Well, I like that.
I do appreciate those little moments amidst the rest of the chaos.
I think I wish everything would be more like a cartoon where all of it literally happened.
That would kind of be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
In addition to that, we had a number of Muslim congresswomen wearing hijab mm-hmm. being sworn in on Thomas Jefferson's copy of the Quran, which I presume makes a whole bunch of other conservative wignuts heads explode.
Yeah.
So that's all very good. That all says to me, and I know that you and I have a difference of opinion broadly on this, Joe, in that you don't think that these demographic switches are in and of themselves very meaningful.
I'm not sure where you're going or what you're saying.
Well, because we've talked about this before. I brought up, when these barriers fall, when the proportions of women and people of color in Congress start to rise to unprecedented levels, that this in and of itself is meaningful. I think you tend to believe it's a little less meaningful. But I'm going down a rabbit hole
here. I'm not sure what I believe.
Let's leave that where it is.
Yeah, I think you better.
I submit that it's evidence of... It's evidence of progress. It's evidence of the United States.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
At long last, living up to what it put down on paper.
I think it's over time when the Congress of the United States should demographically represent the people of America.
Oh, long past time, yeah. Yeah. And we all evidence indicates that that's where we're heading. So that's good. Also, we have a very interesting persona in... the newly elected Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York City.
Yeah, I'm going to confess lust in my heart.
Okay. She is she is a really interesting American political figure. I can't recall any analogous figure in our recent
history.
She
danced into her office, man.
She danced into her office. She is young. She is smart. She is unapologetic in her progressive stances. She is calling vociferously for the implementation of a Green New Deal, something we've talked about on this program for years, something that's talked about in progressive circles for years. And very interestingly, during the swearing-in ceremony last week, when she was sworn in, that was the only time that the Republicans in the room booed anybody. They booed her. Why? Because she scares the crap out of them. And that is brilliant. That's what we need.
Well, I like her boldness, and I like her smartness, and I like it that she's a social democrat. I think it's great.
Oh, I think it's great, too. And she's absolutely brilliant at playing the modern digital political game.
Yes.
Her social media game is very strong, and it makes it freaks conservatives out. If you follow her on Twitter, which I recommend that you do, it's very entertaining, uh-huh. read some of the responses to her. The right doesn't know what to do. They do not know what to do about this young, this young, energetic, smart woman who is daring to challenge the prerogatives that they've held for years and years and years. She came out recently advocating for a 70% marginal tax rate on incomes over $10 million.
You know, that's ironic because at one point, for several years, the tax rate on income for the wealthy was 90%, and they were happy with it.
Yes, 90% under that leftist champion, Dwight David Eisenhower.
Yep.
Right. So this has sparked a different conversation, again, long overdue in American politics. She was, of course, pilloried by the right, saying, oh, my God, what a fringy idea, that 70%, oh, my God. And so she rebutted, just as you did now, oh, this is nothing new. This is not a fringe position. And then prominent progressive economists like Paul Krugman were quick to jump to her defense and say, yes, she's absolutely correct. And dragged out that historical record to prove exactly that point. So she's talking about the very things that we in the leftist community have talked about as being absolutely necessary for years and years and years. A new federal jobs program designed at putting Americans to work, rebuilding the middle class, and at the same time, heading off climate disaster. And now it is being embodied on the floor of the United States Congress by this new generation of progressives. We were on the cusp, and I'm disappointed that this didn't happen, of forming an actual Green New Deal committee in the House of Representatives. That ended up not happening, but what we did see instead was the reinstitution of the climate crisis, Select Committee on the Climate Crisis.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of things that could be done that would revitalize the economy and help with this climate crisis. For example, we are the only modern industrialized country, including China, including Russia, including much of Africa now with Chinese aid, including all of Europe, that doesn't have high-speed electric choo-choos.
High-speed and electric choo-choos.
High-speed electric choo-choos, trains. We call them trains.
Term?
Yeah, it's technical term, choo-choos.
No, we don't have any of those things. But such a thing could easily be conceived of as part of a broad Green New Deal.
Well, yeah.
And Americans could be paid to design and to build it.
Yeah.
We're talking about real jobs for working people that will allow them a decent standard of living and at the same time will reorient our economy away from the combustion of fossil fuels and embrace sustainable and renewable sources of energy.
Well, I like to focus on the railroad issue because, in fact, the way we get around fast now is we use jet planes, which is an old technology, really. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, it's a polluting technology. And one of the reasons that we don't build these trains, I'm sure, is because the airplane industry and the various airline companies are able to control a lot of Republican votes and to keep anything like that from ever getting underway.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call to take part in this conversation. Let's take care of a little business here. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Physicians for Social Responsibility.
Yay!
Great organization.
Yeah, yeah, I give them money.
Yeah, talk about the need to eliminate nuclear weapons from the planet. At 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Stage and Studio presents the documentary Ing Doc Hay, Frontier Herbalist. I probably mispronounced that horribly. My apologies. It's about the roots of a thriving Eastern Oregon Chinatown. Having read that, I know that I mispronounced that horribly.
Well, you did, but yeah. It's. Have you ever been to that? What's left of that place, which is a museum?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's really interesting. And this guy's use of Chinese herbs was far and wide the best medical delivery in that region. He alone could cure blood poisoning at that time with Chinese herbs.
Wow,
it's really true.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
All right, at 11:30, Art Focus talks to photographer Jason Savage about his project Stripping Out Loud, a series of 69 photos of Portland area exotic dancers. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Why do they call it exotic?
There's an answer to that question. I'm not sure it would satisfy you, but, you know. But, you know, that's a story made for radio, right? A series of photos about exotic dancers?
Well,
it
allows the mind to wander.
All right, 503-231-8187. Let's go to Mark. Good morning.
Hey, Joe and Abe. How are you?
Very well. How are you, sir?
Good. I called a couple of weeks ago, and I said that Joe was part of the silent generation, not to disparage him. Just wanted to say that you know, that's just a class, that's just a classification when we talk about large groups of people as far as generation.
Wait a minute, did you call me the silent generation?
Yeah, that's technically, Joe, that's the generation you're a part of, the Americans who grew up like were children during the Depression. And I think they're classified as the silent generation because it's sort of like people were poor, you kind of had to kind of
Boy,
really
there's
hard.
A lot of people. There's a lot of people in this town. I mean, I used to write for the Argonian and so on. I don't think silent is quite correct.
Well, I know. That's just a term that I picked up somewhere, but I find it really interesting. I also mentioned that my mother-in-law is part of the silent generation. She you know, was born in the mid-30s, that kind of thing.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but I was not born in the 30s.
Okay, well. All right. Anyway, so one other point I just wanted to make before I get off the air here is that I wish that, what is it, Ocasio-Cortez from New York?
Yeah.
I'm a New Yorker, and I get that language. I use that language in Portland. So you could take the New Yorker out of New York, but you can't take the whatever, you know.
Well, remember, it was not she who used the term.
But the thing is, what she needs to do is when she talks about taxing the rich at 70%, she needs to have some historical background along with that statement saying, this is what we used to do, and life was just fine. So I think I would love to hear some historical context when this comes out. So that's all I wanted to say. You guys have a great day, and don't stay silent, Joe. Okay.
Okay, man. Thanks a lot for the call.
Silent generation. You really ought to embrace that more often, Joe.
Are you saying I should shut up?
No.
Oh, I'm a little confused.
Maybe.
Maybe. Sometimes.
Francis, you're next. Good morning.
Hi. I think he's mistaken. He's trying to age us about 10 or 15 years. But because we're the baby boomers, children of the 60s, and we were not silent and have not been ever since. But I was very, it did my heart good to see Alexandra Ortiz taking her picture selfies with Barbara Lee.
Yeah, wasn't that cool?
Yes, Barbara Lee has been a soul voice for a long time, as far as I'm concerned, and very brave woman. She was the only one, if you recall, who voted in the entire Congress against the War Powers Act, which caused us to go into Iraq.
Yes, she's a smart woman, a brilliant woman, and has good politics.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they're joining forces. It's a beautiful thing to see. And she has the experience there to where if they get together, they can do some pretty awesome things, I believe. But I wanted to say that I think that that man, Mitch McConnell, why is everyone leaving him alone? He's the one that's allowing all this to continue.
Well, I think he's half turtle. So, you know, what are you going to say?
Well, you know, I mean, he's in a position to where he can go ahead and bring everything to a vote. And if the president doesn't want to sign it, it'll be law in 10 days. Or if he vetoes it, they can override his veto. What are they doing? Why are they letting
Ding, ding, ding. You're absolutely right, Francis. Yeah, he's claiming right now that he won't bring anything to a vote that the president won't sign. But we're talking about a bill that was passed 100-0 just a few weeks ago. So, yeah, clearly the votes are there to override a presidential veto.
Thank you. So I don't know what he's doing. I mean, that's the man that I think is the one who's the most sinister. Trump is a flim-flam man who plays on people.
Well, wait a minute. Now, are we indulging in a contest to say which one of these guys is the most sinister?
Well, either one of them. I think dude that played Cheney, you know, who called on the devil, who thanked the devil because of his inspiration to play that role.
Yeah.
He also mentioned that he'd love to play Mitch McConnell. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, I think McConnell answers to power and understands only power.
So he's playing to somebody other than the people.
I believe he has intimate congress with the devil.
Excuse me. I think it's corporate wealth.
That's what I'm talking about.
It has nothing to do with the representing the people. So.
Oh, no, I agree with you.
All right. You guys take care.
Yeah.
Enjoy the day.
Thanks for the call.
All right. Okay, so Raquel has written into the Facebook page to ask, this may be a silly question, but for those of us who don't know, what exactly does it mean that the government is shut down? And someone mentioned that we won't get tax returns because of this. Okay.
True that.
Yes, true that. Here's what it means. The government can carry out its functions only if it is funded to do so, right? Government functions are carried out by people. People earn paychecks. People need to be paid. There's also other investments the government has to do, materials of various kinds, supplies, all kinds of things. Everything you need to operate a business, the government needs to conduct its operations, right? So when we have an impasse between the legislative and executive branches, like we do now, over how the government ought to be funded and what those priorities for that funding is, sometimes we reach a situation like we're in now where there no resolution is arrived at.
Well, this never happened until Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, it's a fairly new phenomenon. Yeah. No resolution is arrived at, and so the government is forced, because it has no money to continue operating, to shut down some or all of its functions. Now, what we're in the midst of right now is not a total government shutdown. So-called essential personnel are still doing their jobs, but a whole lot of other folks, about 800 some odd thousand at this point, are not able to go to work because there's no money to pay them. So this means that everybody from workers at the Internal Revenue Service who process, collect and process taxes aren't going to work, and that we may not see our tax returns in the near future because those folks are not on the job. Also, people at the Federal Aviation Administration who inspect planes for proper maintenance are not able to do their job. In fact, there's even been out-of-work members of the FAA with signs at airports saying that your plane has not been inspected for safety today.
Well,
this is happening.
Yeah.
There's also a report,
we like that.
really interesting report in the New York Times about a town in the panhandle of Florida that was devastated by Hurricane Michael late last year. Talking about the many federal employees who work there who are not able to go to work, and how that this is stretching them to the breaking point in terms of keeping their families above water.
That's a good joke with the flooding and all, you know.
Oh, right, yeah. I probably should have picked some other phrase there. But they, the reporter talks to a whole bunch of people who occupy a bunch of different jobs about how the shutdown is affecting them. So I came across a really, really interesting quote in that article that's germane not only to the shutdown, I think, but to the mindset of people who voted for and still support Donald Trump. So this, the woman who's quoted is named Crystal Minton. She works at a federal prison in Florida, and she was deemed non-essential personnel, so she hasn't been able to go to work at the prison for a while. And she's looking to pick up odd jobs, other gigs on the side to keep things going in the meantime. She has a fiance who is going to take a bunch of vacation days to look after their kid.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really harming people. So I'm going to quote you now from the article. The shutdown on top of the hurricane has caused Ms. Minton to rethink a lot of things. I voted for him, and he's the one who's doing this, she said of Mr. Trump. I thought he was going to do good things. He's not hurting the people he needs to be hurting.
Mm, that's interesting.
That's a very telling
quote.
Are we
seeing a rise of awareness of class here?
I think we are, yes. When you say shut down the government, there's a section of the conservative electorate that goes, yeah, government doesn't do anything good anyway. Bah! But in many cases, people who work for the government perform essential services and depend on that job to feed their families. So yes, the government does do things that are necessary for the function of a modern society, and it employs people to boot. Yeah, we're starting to see, I think, a crack in that wall that wall of support for Donald Trump amongst
you
many people in the working
happening?
Classes.
Already we are falling into the pattern of the obscenity that is Trump.
Yeah, I would say you're right.
I mean, when you can't use the word crack, you understand. And we're not talking about cocaine.
I understand that, yeah. So, Raquel, I hope that begins to answer your question. A government shutdown means, essentially, the laying off of many people who cannot be paid because the government has no funding.
Well, aside from the hardship to those people, yeah, which is very real, you and I will not be getting those checks from our income tax.
Yeah, you or I, and lots of other people, too.
And I was going to buy a big screen something.
Well, now you're going to have to wait,
I guess.
For a lot of people, particularly in the working classes, tax refund time is one of the larger positive financial events that happens during the course of a given year. At no other point in the year does a typical working class family suddenly have a few thousand dollars land in their lap, right? If that doesn't happen, that has real consequence. That is a damaging thing for the economic lives of these families.
And damaging thing for the economy.
Exactly. For the businesses who would stand to benefit from that money being spread around in the economy.
So I won't buy my big screen.
You won't buy your big screen. But for many people, it's, I can't repair my leaky roof.
Right.
So this is real pain for real people. I can't send my kid to daycare, precisely. Let's go back to the phones. Harry, you're next.
Greetings, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
With the Congress changing, with all these women that are now in the House of Representatives, it's over 100, correct?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, maybe it's a good time to bring back the Equal Rights Amendment.
I'd be for it.
Yeah, well, remember that it did pass in Congress, and it was then propagandized out of possibility at the state level.
Yeah, but they could bring it back again.
Yeah,
you could. Because I think that this is a good time for them to do it, because only having the Congress is going to be kind of hard to put things through. But I think this one will go through. Through the House and the Senate no problem.
You're probably right. I don't know about the Senate, but you're probably right. But here's the thing. The question that is dogging Nancy Pelosi, who is not my favorite person but is a pretty competent liberal, is what to do first and how to do it, how to structure the changes that need to be made in such a manner that they are effective, that they can be done, and that they make sense in all kinds of ways. This is a very difficult job. And she is, relative to the new people, quite conservative. So we really have some challenges here within the structure of this new movement in the Democratic Party. It's going to be challenging even at that level. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, we have the cuckoo bird president who cannot speak without lying. I mean, it's just amazing. The guy, I think there's some kind of brain damage or something, because the guy lies unnecessarily all the time.
Yeah, but him using the army, and he can use the army to build the wall because the Corps of Engineers is the army. So there's a good possibility that he might get them to do it.
Well, yeah, you're right. It is a snarl. I think that's the technical term for it. The snarl being that the Army Corps of Engineers does do projects like roads and water projects and so on in the interest of the country. And yet, at the same time, you're not supposed to bring troops, into activity in the United States. So there's a lot of technical questions, and of course we now have a Supreme Court, which is a 5-4 Supreme Court of conservatives with the beer guy and others, you know? So it's difficult. It's very difficult to say what will happen. And it's also the case that the people in the Republican Party have lost all sense of morality.
As a progressive, I have a good idea for border security.
What's that?
It's different from the wall. What they need to do is, instead of building a wall, they need to build a ditch 30 feet deep, 30 feet across, all along the border.
Well, we got the Rio Grande, man.
Yeah, and we can have robots build it.
A robot-built ditch. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you want to put in that ditch? I don't want you to say anything nasty, but...
Alligators?
Alligators, yeah, of course.
A moat. We have a border moat.
Well, yeah, the old moats were where they used to dump the human waste.
Across,
you know.
That'd be easy to take care of than a wall.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But also, it would be equally a bad symbol of the failure of our nation.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, and sayonara.
Hey, thank you, sir. Okay, turning to the specific demographics of the 116th Congress. 25 senators are women now. That's exactly one-fourth of the Senate. That's the highest female Senate representation to date.
Right.
102 members of the House of Representatives are women. That is also the highest proportion to date. So yes, that's progress in the right direction. That's progress towards actual representation.
Well, it's good that it is progress toward actual representation, but it's also important to be wary of the stereotype that women somehow are more progressive or more liberal, absolutely, than men. It's a dangerous assumption, though in this case, it is true.
I don't know that it's so dangerous an assumption, Joe, because human history as written by men has been a bloody mess.
Yeah, but then there's Thatcher and, you know.
Yeah, right. But how many other precedents can you point to over the course of history? Virtually none.
Catherine the Great.
Yeah, that's two over Elizabeth the whole span of
Elizabeth the First.
Yeah, okay. The overwhelming bulk of human history has been shaped by men.
No, and I agree. I'm just being silly.
I know. As I mentioned, it is a bloody freaking mess. So I think it's about time that we gave women a crack at this thing.
I'm going to let
that's
that.
Just me talking.
I'm not even going to make a joke
okay,
out
fine.
Of that.
Let's go back to the phones. Corey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Briefly, if I think they said Customs and Border Protection caught 6 suspected terrorists at the southern border.
Yes.
But yet 41 at the northern border. So I think we do need to build a wall to stop the Canadians.
Oh, yeah.
Coming in.
Oh, those Canadians. Why are we not talking about the Canadians?
You know, some of them exactly. talk French.
Yeah.
Thank you. We need to. They come in there with their maple syrup, and no, I'm just kidding.
And their poutine.
Yeah, poutine. Ugh, ugh, ugh.
But briefly, it's funny. This morning, I'm walking to the coffee shop, and I live in Houston now, and I listen to you guys, and I live in the most progressive part of Houston. It's called Montrose, and I mean, but it's still Texas. And so there's a guy about 3 homes down. You know, he's cordial. You can tell he's Republican. He has the Trump sticker. He's a veteran, but he works for TSA. And as I'm going to the coffee shop this morning, he was pulling the Trump sticker from the back of his bumper. He's pulling both Trump stickers from the back of his truck. And he saw me, and he waved. And so to me, I'm thinking, so it wasn't Charlottesville. It wasn't Stormy Daniels. It wasn't Russia. But it's his money. Trump's going to affect this man's pocketbooks. And I think that ultimately is going to have an effect on people. I think that he didn't look too happy going to work. Like I said, he's a hardworking guy. He works for the TSA, but he's going to work today, and I don't believe he's getting paid. But
well,
I think
you know, it's interesting. A lot of TSA people are calling in sick.
Yes.
It's a sudden plague.
Work, so, but it's the money. I think, like, ultimately, when you mess with people's money, no matter, you know, what side you're on, and yeah, for him to take those bumper stickers off the back of his truck, I found it to sort of, you know, well, there you go. So,
yeah.
Good hearing from you guys. Talk to you guys later.
Hey, man, thanks for tuning in all the way from Texas. I think
yeah.
that's awesome.
No, that is awesome. I also want to warn people. Michael Moore said, and I believe he was right on the earlier election, that we cannot assume that Trump won't get reelected. We really have to put together programs. We really have to put together a solid movement of a progressive sort. And we really have to be much more aware in our politics than Hillary Clinton was. Or else we're going to get Trump again. No, take it serious. Take it serious.
I don't think he'll be reelected. But you're right, we need to be alert to that danger.
Well, I don't think he will either. I think he's just too much of a clown and too much of a bully and too much of a bad man.
But yes, and the evidence of his malfeasance is everywhere.
Yeah. And we haven't even heard from the Mueller stuff.
This is true. But here's why you might be right. James writes into the Facebook page to say, Trump is a cult leader. You cannot deal with his constituents using logic. He has successfully tapped into the emotions and fears of a dwindling white majority who are resistant to change, as well as clinging desperately to the lies that proliferate American mythologies. That is spot on.
No, that's true. That's
yeah.
true.
And so you're talking about a chunk of the electorate, a not insignificant chunk, to whom you really cannot speak reasonably on the issues.
Yeah, and Fox News is still the largest news reporting agency on television.
No, not anymore.
Not anymore?
Nope.
That MSNBC
last
beat
month
them?
They were eclipsed by MSNBC.
I like MSNBC.
It's a mixed bag, I think.
No,
but the intellectual standard is far higher than on Fox News.
Well, and also I'm in love with Rachel Maddow, though it's hopeless.
It is for so many reasons, Joe.
Really?
So very many reasons, yeah. Okay, so I want to follow up on something you just brought up. That is the danger of Trump being reelected. I don't think he's going to be reelected, but I also don't think he's going to be removed from office before the 2020 election.
No, and I think there's many a slip twixt the cup and the election.
Boy, that was beautiful.
Thank you. I thought it was good.
Now, and here's why. I want to explain why I believe that. We have, of course, a constitutional remedy for a president who abuses executive power or acts in a manner detrimental to the nation. It's called impeachment. We all are familiar with it.
Crimes and misdemeanors.
High crimes and misdemeanors against the Constitution. This is different from a legal proceeding. The standards of evidence are different. You don't even have to commit a crime as a president to be impeached.
Right.
If what you're doing is obviously detrimental to the country.
Right.
I think it could be argued on a whole range of issues that Trump's actions are detrimental to the country. So how does this work? Impeachment arises out of the House of Representatives. The Democrats now control the House. The Democrats can now, if they want to, impeach the President of the United States. If those articles of impeachment are passed by the House, the President is considered impeached, and then we move to the next stage of the process, which is a trial in the Senate. The Senate decides whether or not the President should be removed from his office. Apologies for rehashing civics class from junior high, but there's a lot of people who don't understand this. When Bill Clinton was impeached, he was not removed by the Senate. He kept his job, although he had successfully been impeached by the House.
Well, apparently it was because he lied about a dirty dress.
Apparently it was, yes. But here is the deal. What I'm hearing now from the Democratic House of Representatives is profoundly disappointing to me on a number of levels. They're talking about, well, we might impeach, we might not. They're worried about the optics of appearing overzealous. They're worried about the political backlash if they were to instigate impeachment proceedings. All this is classic, spineless, invertebrate, Democratic, wishy-washy crap. The stuff that has driven progressives nuts for years and years and years. It displays an absolute lack of political commitment, of moral turpitude, of backbone of any kind. If the president has committed impeachable offenses, the Democratic House of Representatives has a duty to instigate impeachment proceedings. It's not a political calculus based upon the optics. It is a constitutional duty. Go ahead.
Well, I disagree with you.
You disagree with me?
Yeah. No, I think that it's purely a political process, first of all.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that the strategy should be to hold back the impeachment until the Mueller report is in.
I understand that, and I think that's a wise course of action. If you're going to do something as consequential as impeaching the President of the United States, then you better have something like a stained dress. No, I mean, you better have something like conclusive findings from the special counsel in his investigation. Well, I think that's a sound tactic.
Yeah, and my understanding is the guy is a criminal, so it shouldn't be
that's
that hard.
My understanding, too. But what I'm hearing from Democrats in Congress is even if the Mueller report is conclusive in the president's upholding the president's criminality, they still may not impeach based upon what they perceive public reaction to that to be.
Well, if they're worrying about, as you say, optics, they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, and that's really disappointing to me.
Well, and I, again, going back to Michael Moore, we cannot assume anything about this situation because there is a hardcore, what is it, 30%?
About 30%.
About 30% of people who believe the night is day and that God is in heaven and that everything's cool. Unless, of course, the evils of the socialists overtake us.
Right. Yeah, but, you know, I don't care. Still, if the president has committed impeachable offenses, he or she should be impeached.
Well,
full stop.
I can't argue. I mean, you're very righteous, but you may be wrong in the tactical sense.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But it's evidence that the spine that has been showing signs of life amongst the Democratic body politic may not be as fully developed as we would hope.
Well, that's true. And Nancy Pelosi is, amongst liberals and leftists, quite conservative and very careful. And one of her charms, one of her amazing things, is her ability to count votes.
Yeah, she's really good at bringing her constituency into line and getting them to pass legislation.
Yeah. No, I have enormous respect for her, but I do think that she's much more conservative than
Indeed.
I would like.
Let's go back to the phones. Joel, you're next.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
I wanted to take the conversation back to a caller that called in earlier, and he was talking about how Trump says all this crazy stuff and how the Democratic candidate will also have to just go off the rails and say crazy things. And I just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts and, of course, offer mine on why Trump is allowed to say that sort of stuff and why it actually works for him and why it totally would not work for a Democratic or another challenger to him to take a similar tact. And that is because Trump is of the same class as the people who are making us, or who are giving us the news. And
well, wait a minute. That Trump is whatever else he is a child of privilege,
exactly.
And most of us are not.
No, most of you on KABU are not.
Most of us are pretty poor, actually.
He's talking
about the
media.
Now. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm talking about the news media. And that's why they allow him to say that kind of stuff and trumpet all that thing, because they're making money off of it. And these are the most, you know, like most of the people that are running our country now and are in charge are the most immoral people in our country. Amoral. People, they don't care. As long as if it bleeds, it leads. And if they get money out of it, you know, they're not worried about what he says.
It's certainly true. Again, I want to refer everybody to this article in the New Yorker magazine, which describes the process whereby one guy developed these fake reality shows, and as a result, Trump ended up being a popular hero in a totally fake context, which worked for people who look at television and think it's some kind of real thing.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway,
sounds like we got a great echo chamber there, fellas. You guys have a nice day.
Hey, thanks a lot for the call.
Great echo chamber here, fellas.
Hey, yeah. He just
smacked us right there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Jeremy, you're next.
Hi. Since no women have called up to do this, I think to confess your lust for a woman a third your age approximately is mildly obnoxious, but to then do it again with someone half your age.
Wait a minute. Seriously criticizing a joke, man?
No, but you did it twice. It's sort of.
Well, how about if I do it three times? Would that be even worse?
I don't know. I think I'd like some women to call in, if not this week, next week. And if I'm out to lunch, I'll apologize. But
No, you don't need to apologize. I'm just teasing.
And by the way, Rachel Maddow is kind of pro-imperial behavior by the United States. She wrote a book about that. She comes from a military family. She just believes in, you know, fighting the right wars. And I think you'll find her wildly less inspiring. And I also think it's offensive for straight old farts like yourself to contest lust for younger lesbians. It's just off.
You're taking this very seriously, if I may say so.
Yeah, well, I hate Rachel Maddow. That's part of it.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, I'm glad it's not me you're attacking.
No, I hate you too.
Oh, okay, great.
Great.
Well, on that note, thank you for the call.
What can I say? I'm not going to apologize for having lust in my heart.
No.
Jimmy Carter was cool with that.
That's
I think
true.
It's okay.
Yeah, but you might want to think about maybe not expressing that over the airwaves. I don't know.
Do you really think that?
No.
Okay. I'm just wondering. I thought we were having fun here.
I thought we were too. I thought it was funny what you said.
Yeah.
But apparently Jeremy didn't.
Well, evidently not.
No, evidently not. All right. To sum up, the government is shut down. It's causing economic and social hardship to hundreds of thousands of families across the country. The president is throwing a tantrum, sucking his thumb, and demanding that the country build a huge wall along our southern border before he will allow the government to resume operations again.
I wish he'd just say, I'm going to hold my breath until they build the wall.
Yeah, that would
give me hope.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't think he'd stick to it, though. He doesn't have much of that.
Well, he's got a lot of breath.
He does have a lot of breath.
He also has a lot of breath in the sense of a belly.
Indeed, he does.
Let's attack him physically while we're at it.
Okay, and to continue our summation, tonight, 8 o'clock, I believe.
No, 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
Oh, no, 6 o'clock in our time.
Our time.
9 o'clock,
oh, 9 o'clock
in the
Eastern. Yeah. Boy, I'm glad you jumped in on that.
Yeah.
6 o'clock our time. Turn on Network TV and hear the president lie to you.
Well, I think it's your duty as a citizen to hold your nose and listen to him.
Yeah, and people might question that. Why should I tune in just to be lied to? I get that. I understand that.
Well,
feeling.
There's a game we can play. You get to listen and count the number of lies.
There's that, too. You can drink while you do it, but I don't advise it. You probably...
No, and I wouldn't smoke any dope either, you know. getting high, listening to the President of the United States is really weird.
But, you know, you might ask, why should I tune in to be lied to? I think it's important to understand the scope of the lies, the substance of the lies or the lack thereof, and why they're being uttered. I think that's important.
Yeah, and I'm sorry we don't have time for more of you. Thank you very much for listening, and I promise I'll give up Rachel Maddow for Christmas.
Disorder from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the film screening From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at the Sunnyside Community House in Portland. From Shock to Awe follows the path of two combat veterans from the Iraq War as they live with post-traumatic lack of effective treatment and their search for healing and transformation through plant medicine journeys. Again, that's the film screening From Shock to Awe, A Journey of Hope and Transformation, on Thursday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at the Sunnyside Community House, 3520 Southeast Yamhill Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, Physicians for Social Responsibility talk about the need to eliminate nuclear weapons from the planet.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the counter rally for reproductive justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. On the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, this rally is in support and solidarity with all people who have considered, are considering, or have received abortions. It is a protest of the Rally to the Oregon Right to Life March and will celebrate our victories in imagining a future where every person has access to the reproductive health care they want and deserve. Again, that's the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square on the southwest corner at Morrison and Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.org